It is. It's great to be here again with you and recognize some faces, and I know some of you from times I've been here. Those of you that don't know me, I grew up in Victoria, lived here most of my life, but I worked with Young Life of Canada for about 30 years, and so that took me out of Victoria for a while, but then I was able to move back here about 18 years ago as the Young Life Director, and so for most of my life, I've lived right here in Victoria. I don't know, how many of you are, I won't ask for hands, but for some of us, you know, we're in the season of Lent, and it's this ancient spiritual discipline that Christians have observed, and some of our research, some of the evidence would show that right from the very beginning, even the apostles themselves, some of the historic evidence tells us that they would recognize this time of Lent for, depending on... There was a few different traditions, but for whether it was 4 days or 40 hours or 40 days before the annual celebration of the resurrection of Jesus at Easter, that there would be the special observance and special spiritual disciplines to kind of consider our own mortality, consider our own sin and what it is that Jesus paid for on the cross, and maybe some time of special putting aside of some habits or even some pleasures for the sake of taking the time to really concentrate on knowing, loving, and serving the Lord in some deeper way. That and maybe some of those habits would even stick after Lent. So that was kind of the hope too. So we're in this time of Lent. We're about halfway through it, and I've been thinking about, especially some of the individuals who were experiencing that last week of Jesus' life before he was killed on the cross, before his resurrection. Think about some of the people who, you know, some of them were real players in the action. You know, people like Herod. People like the disciples themselves, or Pilate, the religious elders who, you know, sort of drove some of the events. And then there was other people who were bystanders. You know, they just sort of were there and probably wondering, what is happening? Why is this going on? And I thought today we would just take a look at one of these bystanders, because he's somebody that fascinates me. It's partly because so little is known about Simon of Cyrene. Now, maybe you've heard messages before, or maybe you've done your own studies about this person who shows up. And in the Lucan account, he actually only shows up in one verse. And something we're going to see is just how his plans were completely, it seems to me, changed by Jesus. And maybe that's happened to you. Maybe it's happening to you right now. You know, you mentioned that they're going to have stories for Mexico. You know, they had their plans rocked, right? I mean, they had circumstances happened. And some of you know, poor Hannah, who was sick and had to get IV. Boy, others got sick, and you know, and then there's. I'm not supposed to go into it, I guess. There's be other people going to talk about it, but I've been following it on Facebook, and here are these plans. They go down to Mexico, and their plans get wrecked. Well, that's kind of like what happened to Simon of Cyrene, and so as a part of Lent, as part of a considering and engaging with this season of Lent, even today, let's have a look at this fellow, Simon of Cyrene, and see what we might learn from him. So, or from his experience. So, if you're reading along, there's only one verse. Luke 23, verse 26. Our two other synoptic gospels do talk about Simon a little bit, and then we'll say something about John as well. But if you want to look at Luke 23, 26, says this. As they led Jesus away, so this is after they have assaulted him in so many ways. They've taken him, and he was beaten, he was whipped, and he was ridiculed. And then Jesus is finally taken away. They seized Simon from Cyrene, who was on his way in from the country, and they put the cross on him and made him carry it behind Jesus. So this, first of all, this Simon, what do we know about this fellow? Well, first of all, Mark, the Gospel of Mark, adds this, that he was the father of Alexander and Rufus, and that he was, he was just coming in from the country. So he's just on his way in. Matthew tells us that he has a more forceful word, that they forced him to carry the cross. Although it's interesting that John's gospel says that Jesus carried his own cross. Well, that's true. And some people would say, people make mountains out of molehills like this. See, there's a contradiction. John says Jesus carried his own cross, and the three synoptic gospels say that Simon carried the cross. Well, it doesn't take a lot of imagination to think, yeah, Jesus carried his cross until he stumbled, then they forced Simon to take it the rest of the way. Done. See? Doesn't take a smart guy to do that. So, somebody's, you know, see, this is funny. Eh? Some of these things people say, see, there's a contradiction in the whole Bible, you can throw it away. So, also, what do we know about this Cyrene? Well, Cyrene, we know that it was a place. And that was a happening city at the time. At the time of Jesus, it was a big area, and it was it's in northern Africa, in the area that we call Libya now, and that it was about 900 miles, which is about 1,400 kilometers from Jerusalem, and Simon, he may have been traveling there for the Passover, and he may have just arrived a bit late, because we know this is Friday, and the Passover is happening sort of Wednesday, Thursday, but maybe he was, of course, Jerusalem would have been crowded, so all the people coming in, they would have to sleep outside, most of them, every night, so he'd probably come in each day, and maybe go as far away, like Jesus did, down to Bethany, not that far away, and so he'd go in and sleep there, maybe at some friend's house, or some relative, or an inn, and so each day they would come into the city. So we don't know if Simon was just arriving, or if maybe he lived there, and he was gone for a bit, and he was coming in, or maybe he traveled all the way from Cyrene just for the Passover, just this time. That could have been the case, because it was about a month-long journey if you were to travel from Cyrene to Jerusalem, and certainly people would have. So it could have been Simon's experience that he was traveling, and maybe he just arrived. Or maybe he had traveled and got there, you know, the few days before and had been celebrating Passover in Jerusalem. And, you know, it may have been a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for him. Of course, every Hebrew says every year in the Seder celebration, right? It ends with the final toast, that final cup of wine, and you say, next year in Jerusalem. So Simon may have been saying that his whole life and maybe got his first chance to be there. You know, maybe he traveled that 900 miles, 1,400 kilometers, and it would have been a very dangerous journey. There'd be robbers, wild animals. Imagine, I mean, that's a long walk, 900 miles, 1,400 kilometers. It'd take about a month. I mean, maybe you could hitch a ride on a camel, or, you know, other people going there. I don't know, a donkey. But it would be a long trip, be very expensive. Be something maybe, we know that people would save their whole lives for one time to get to Jerusalem. So maybe that was his experience. he would have stopped at some of the great places along the way, like Alexandria would be along the way there, and maybe stopped there for a bit. And Who knows what he saw along the way? But he would have probably planned for this. He may have saved his money for years. He may have plotted out his travel plans, and maybe it was with a group of people that he made all these plans. He had all of his hopes, maybe, centered on this experience that he was going to have. And as I said, this could have been this once-in-a-lifetime, a once-in-a-lifetime hope and desire and dream that he would be able to have this experience. I don't know if you've ever had that kind of time when you've had your plans wrecked. have you ever had that? I mean, if you live long and well enough, your plans will get wrecked at some point. Sometimes in some trivial ways, sometimes in some horrible ways, some real crises that can happen. You know, I think I've said this every time we hear you. Don't be the bearer of bad news, but it's the reality of our lives that you're either just coming out of a crisis or you're in the middle of one or you're about to go into one. That's life. And it seems circumstances, or sometimes we could say God, keeps interrupting our plans. Well, this was what happened to Simon. So, wait, I'm going to get a prop here. Because I picture Simon walking into town, and he's got a suitcase. Of course, he's tied a ribbon on it so that, you know, he doesn't get messed up in the luggage rack thing there. And I'm sure he had, this is my traveling hat. I'm sure Steve is wearing something like this down in Mexico. So I'm sure he arrived into Jerusalem. Like, and as he's traveling along, first of all, from far away, the first thing he would have seen from far away, from coming in from the country, would be Jerusalem itself, not even the city yet, but because of the temple itself, and the very top of the temple was this had gold leaf hammered onto the very top dome of the temple, and the shine of that in that hot, sunny country could have been seen for kilometers. So that'd be the first thing you see, this amazing shine, this light coming off of there. So maybe he comes up over, you know, that last little scraggly hill, and he comes up, and there it is. He sees that shine, and he just starts walking towards that, and he's heading towards. So, and then as he gets closer, he starts to see the scale of that place. Because at first you'd see that shine, and you'd see this enormous building, and you think, I must almost be there. There's this huge building there. But as you get closer and closer, you realize I'm hardly there yet. It's because the building is so huge. The city itself would look tiny compared to this giant building. The temple itself was huge. It was one of the seven wonders of the world. It was one of the most mammoth buildings ever built, Herod's temple. So he's walking closer. So he'd have a lot of time just to look at that. And imagine if this was his first and maybe only opportunity he had to visit there, hoping and planning his whole life, saving for this one opportunity. Can you imagine the thrill of foreseeing it? I see the shine. I've heard about it. Yeah, maybe he's walking with a group of people. I heard about the shine. There's the shine. I think I see the shine. Do you see the shine? Yeah. And then he's walking towards it. I see the city now. Holy smokes, look at that. That's the temple. Wow. Oh, it's bigger than I thought. As he's getting closer and closer, maybe it's taking him still hours to get closer. Finally, he gets there, and there's the huge city. And you walk up this hill into the city, and you walk through some of this gate. So he probably walks through one of the gates there, and you walk into, and if you've visited there, it's still today, these crowded, cramped little streets. And just to get through the streets themselves, they're tiny. But at Passover time, they're clogged with people. So it's just jam-packed with humanity. So, you know, the people streaming into the city, and now he's getting caught up with a group of people. They're coming, they all get streaming through this one gate. As soon as they walk through the gate, it's like you just into this wedge. and you're just full of people, and you're crowded, and you're getting pushed along through the streets, and you're trying to get up towards the temple over there. Oh, I've got to make a turn down this street, and the whole crowds are moving along. But he probably came to some point where, as he's getting through the city, that he hears these crowds. It's not just the normal crowds, but he's hearing shouting, and he's hearing wailing. Like people wailing and crying, this deep, passionate wailing. And he hears the stomping of these nail-shod boots that the Roman soldiers wore. And the cobbled stones of the streets of Jerusalem. You would have heard this. And on the background of this wailing and crowds as he's going through, he said, what is happening? And maybe he came to one cross street, and he stopped because there's a parade of people going that way. And he's looking, and here's this crowd going by, and there's these Roman soldiers, and they are whipping and flogging three people who are carrying crosses. Now, it could be that what they're carrying, some evidence tells us that what they were carrying were the beam itself, just the beam that they would carry until they got to the place of crucifixion, that would be attached to an upright post. So it could be that they're carrying a whole cross or just these beams, but the beams themselves weighed about 40 pounds, about 18 kilograms, And of course, he would have seen, imagine him standing at this crossroad. It's like, what's happening? What is going on? And this is interrupting my plans. I've got to get up to the temple. I've got in my bag. I've got some of some of the sacrifices I have to make. Got a couple pigeons in here. So I got to get up there. What's happening? What is interrupting my plans here? And of course, you know, he probably had no idea who these people were. And of course, the assumption would be, well, I wonder what these guys did to deserve this, because they must deserve it. I mean, otherwise, why would this be happening? So I wonder what these poor fellows did. And so he's watching them go by, and they come right in front of him. He's right there, and close enough they'd be able to see that actually they hung around Jesus' neck a sign. And that's what they would do with the criminals. They'd say, they would hang there a sign that would say what their crime was. You know, so the rest of the city would see it and say, oh, I better not do that or this will happen to me. But the charge that they convicted Jesus of on his sign said, this is Jesus, King of the Jews. That's the official Roman crime that Jesus was punished for. That was the official crime that he was sentenced for. Can you imagine if he had no idea about any of the events? He's standing there, it's like, what's happening? And then he looks, well, but this guy, I wonder what he did. And he saw the other ones, oh, thief, okay, yeah, murderer, okay, fine. Yeah, what's this guy? This is Jesus, King of the Jews. What? What? That's weird. And of course, we know from the accounts of what happened. And then if he looked at this figure, this one named Jesus, he'd hardly be recognized as a human being. I mean, because we know that he'd been beaten, and then he'd been whipped. And you know, you've heard this. He was whipped, of course, with what they call a cat of nine tails, which you know, a whip, a several stringed whip that had different elements, chunks of metal and bone, and that would so that when you would whip, it would rake across one's flesh. And the idea was to try to pull off and rip off most of the person's flesh. And the idea was 40 lashes of that will kill someone, so we'll just give them 39. And that's what they had done to Jesus. So imagine, like, who is this? And what is happening? And it was right there that Jesus stumbled and fell. And Simon literally gets tapped on the shoulder. Probably, because that would happen. That was tradition. The Roman soldiers, that they carried these spears, and the captain in charge of the group, of a spear, and literally anywhere in the world, if a Roman soldier tapped you on the shoulder with his spear, you had to do whatever he said. Didn't matter who you were. And so that's probably what happened. Jesus stumbled. You imagine the soldiers going, oh, look, ah, this, you know, this pathetic creature. He stumbled. He can't even carry his own cross. And so he takes a spear. And just right there, Simon's standing there. He just happens to be, you know, the wrong guy in the wrong place at the wrong time. And the spear maybe taps him, literally taps him on the shoulder. What? You carry the cross. What? What? Are you kidding me? I don't have time for this. You know, plus, the reality of the fact that Jesus, he would have been this figure drenched in blood. There'd be blood all over his beam. And the minute a Hebrew touches blood, they're unclean for a week. He wouldn't have been allowed in the city. I can't touch that. I can't. I'm trying to get up to the temple. What about my plans? What about all my hopes? What about the money I spent to get here? You're ruining everything. What do you mean? Of course, he couldn't say any of that. He'd be killed. They put the spear somewhere else, and then they turn to somebody else. So instead, he literally just has to just drop his suitcase and pick up that cross and carry it and join the procession on the way of the cross. This is and Jesus right behind him. You know, what a scene. I mean, I don't know if you can imagine that. Matthew tells us that then they, that group, came to that place called Golgotha, which means the place of the skull, because the shape of it probably looked like a skull. And it's an area outside, just outside the city. It was also used as a garbage dump just right beside it. And that's where they would kill these criminals. And so he gets there, and of course he sees all the events. And once they take that beam away from him or the cross away, and he's there. And I imagine him staying. I mean, what else does he have to do? He's got nothing to do now for a week. He's not allowed back in the city. He's got blood on him, even a little bit. That's it. You're unclean. So I imagine he probably stayed around and watched the events. And what a confusing scene. As he's amongst all these Roman soldiers and these criminals. And meanwhile, there's also all these religious leaders who are also around, and they're yelling things and talking to each other. And it's just a strange scene. And can you imagine? This is not where I thought I would be. Like this, when I woke up this morning and came in from the country, I could never imagine that I would be standing here with these circumstances. Has it ever happened to you in life? You ever woke up one day and thought, how did I get here? And it may have been some bad decision. It may have been some circumstances. It may have, something that somebody did to you, some way tapped you on the shoulder and forced you into something. But you find yourself somewhere, you go, how did I get here? And you might think to yourself, I am the most pathetic of people. I imagine Simon thought that of himself. I am the most pathetic of people. Look at me. And he watches as these soldiers, they're gambling for Jesus' clothes. They've torn them away from him, or maybe it's the ones that they took before he got drenched in blood, and they're gambling for his clothes. And they take that sign off of Jesus' chest, and they nail it above his head, and they put him on that cross, and they put the two others on the cross, and with their charges above their heads. Again, Matthew 27 tells us, those who passed by Jesus, they hurled insults at him, shaking their heads. They shake their heads at him. Oh, it's pathetic. They started saying things like, you who are going to destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, why don't you save yourself? Why don't you come down from the cross if you're the Son of God? Can you imagine Simon standing there going, what? What are you talking about? What do you mean he said he was going to tear the temple down? What? What do you mean, Son of God? Who said he was? He said he was the Son of God? What? What is happening? And verse 41, in the same way, the chief priests, the teachers of the law, the elders, they mocked him, Jesus. They said, he saved others, but now he can't save himself. What? Excuse me, what are you talking about? What do you mean he saved others? Imagine if one of them said, he saved a lot of people. He healed some blind people, made them see. He raised some people from the dead, walked on water. He fed 5,000 men plus their families with a couple of loaves and fishes, and it was the best bread we've ever had in our lives. But no, we should kill him. What are you talking about? So he claimed to be God, and he proved he is? What? And why is he dying there? And he claimed to be the Messiah? Well, but how could this be the Messiah? The Messiah is supposed to save us, and this guy can't even save himself. What is happening? And obviously, this can't be God's plan. If he was the Messiah, this couldn't be the plan. Again, you ever thought that in your life? The situation I'm in, you think, well, this couldn't be God's plan. And those ones shouting and saying, oh, he says he's the King of Israel. Well, let him come down now from the cross. Then maybe we'll believe him. And maybe Simon thinking, well, yeah, if he's the Messiah, why doesn't he just come off the cross? That would prove it. That would save the day. And if he's the Messiah, that's how he could save us. By coming off the cross. And those of us that know better, we are so grateful that he didn't, aren't we? He didn't come off the cross. You know, as confusing and as mysterious the suffering of Jesus is, this is the basis of our faith, that we are so grateful that he didn't come off the cross. That he, on the cross, absorbed all of our sin, all of our mistakes, all of our disappointments, all of our brokenness, absorbed into himself, because only he could do that as God. See, God had another idea, and it was something better. And of course, we know by 3 p.m., everything went dark. And Simon, if he was still there, he would have heard Jesus say things like, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. And my God, why have you forsaken me? Quoting from Psalm 22. And finally, it is finished. And then he died. Maybe Simon saw all that happen. And we don't know if it made sense to him at the time. In fact, you know, in some ways, again, he could have then, after seeing all those events compounded on his experience to that point already, and he still could have been thinking, I am the most pathetic of people. All of my hopes and my dreams, all of my plans have come to nothing. Obviously, God isn't in this. And maybe he had thoughts like, maybe God isn't real. Look at these circumstances I'm in. Maybe God is so far away. Imagine him standing right at the foot of the cross. Maybe God is so far away that he has no idea what I'm experiencing right now. And he's thinking that at the foot of the cross. There's no way this could be God's plan. How many times have you thought that in your own life? This couldn't be the way God could do something great. But of course, we know that Simon was not the most pathetic of people. He was maybe one of the most privileged of people in history, when you think about it, wasn't he? I mean, imagine, for the rest of his life, this story of Jesus has been told for 2,000 years. And at some point in the story, they'd say, oh, and that's Jesus was passing through those crowded streets of Jerusalem. He stumbled, and then the Roman soldiers pointed out somebody, and it happened to be Simon of Cyrene, and say, you carry the cross. And Simon might be, every time that was told, he'd go, that was me. That was me. Can you imagine? He's the only one who literally carried Jesus' cross. Sometimes just a little perspective changes everything. From, this experience I'm in, this is the most pathetic of situations, to, in reality, this is the most privileged of circumstances. Because God has a bigger idea. And God can do something great. Even in this, yes, He can. Yes, He does. In your life, that's what He does. You know, did he become a follower of Jesus? We don't know, but I believe at least his family did. Because first of all, as we read there, what Mark says, he says they turned to Simon of Cyrene. And he's saying Simon of Cyrene, who, you know, he's the father of Rufus and Alexander. You know them. That's kind of how it's written. And maybe that Rufus was the same one that Paul writes about in Romans 16, where he says, greet Rufus, chosen in the Lord, and his mother. Maybe that's Simon's wife, who's been a mother to me. So, and of course, imagine the moment, you know, if Simon knew nothing of Jesus until after these events, and then somebody explained the good news of salvation in God through Christ and what he did on the cross to Simon, and it all came clear to him that it really is Jesus the Messiah. He really is saving us in this event. And I was there, front row seat, saw the whole thing. And then if some point somebody said, you know something Jesus also said was this? That if anyone would come after me, they must deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. Because whoever wants to save their life is going to lose it. But whoever loses their life, whoever throws down their ambitions and takes up the way of the cross, will actually find their real life. In fact, what good is it for a person to gain the whole world but give up your own soul? What can you give for exchange for your soul? And Simon would think, I did that. I threw down my stuff and I picked up the cross. And I don't know what that would be for you, but that's the call for every follower of Jesus, isn't it? To throw our stuff down and to take up the cross. That's something that we reflect on at this time of Lent as we lead up to recognizing our annual celebration of Easter. And what might that look like for you today? What might you need to throw down? Maybe it's some expectations. Maybe it's some disappointments, some resentments that you've been holding on to. Maybe it's some ambition that you have that you need to throw down, lay it down. Maybe it's some hope or plan. Maybe it's some sacrifice, some suffering, some pain that you need to lay down. It's the way of the cross. Maybe it's some habit, some secret that you need to let go of. And maybe you need to confess to somebody and say, you know what, I need to let this go. And I need your help. I need to confess that I've been caught up in this and I want to let it go. And you need help with that. That's why we confess to one another. That's why we're here together, to help each other. And what does it mean to take up the cross for you? The way of brokenness, the way of breaking our own self-will, our self-reliance, our self-confidence, to build up in us our God-confidence. Because that's God's better idea, and it is better. So I don't know what it is for you. And of course, it's not about helping poor Jesus with his heavy cross. No, he gives us the privilege of walking the way of the cross and taking up his burden. And he says, it's light. So I don't know what that means for you. But I would hope you'd consider, and I'd hope you'd think, and I'd hope you'd talk to each other. Let's talk to the Lord. God, you know, I don't know exactly what it means for any individual here besides myself. But I know generally we have stuff we need to throw down. And it may be in stuff that we would say, yeah, but this is God's stuff. Like Simon going, yeah, but I'm supposed to go into the temple. But God, there's circumstances have happened, and maybe we need to let go of some stuff that we would even think was the way you wanted us to go, and maybe there's a different way. Maybe you've got a bigger and better idea for our lives. Lord, help us to see what it is you need us and want us and invite us to throw down. Help us to be honest, maybe with a couple of people, and ask for some help if it's some habits that we need to let go of or some new habits we need to take up. And Lord, only you know what it is in each of our hearts here, what it is in some new thing we need to take up in taking up your cross and walking the way of the cross. What is that thing that you would have us even this week take up? Lord, by your Holy Spirit, guide us into understanding some new step of giving up and taking up that we could better follow you this week, and this year, in this life, in these circumstances. We pray this trusting in Jesus and his power and his bigger idea for our lives. Amen.